Today on Doomed! Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, right-wing YouTube pundits, we will be talking about the latest January 6th committee hearing that occurred, Tuesday? That's today. Well, we're streaming now, July 12th, just hours ago. And it was certainly an interesting one. There were a number of text messages and video clips that were shown that really sort of revealed some of, you know, Trump's confidants and even just Trump supporters' views going into the events of January 6th when pro-Trump supporters stormed the Capitol in hopes of overturning the 2020 presidential election results for Trump. And joining me to talk about this all, let me bring us both up on the screen here. Give me one second. Is Chris Harrington, Research Director at Media Matters. Craig Harrington, Research Director at Media Matters. What did I tell you? Easiest name on the planet right before we went live, and I was going to mess it up going into it. Don't know why I called you Chris, Craig.
I've gotten a lot of Chris's, so it's all right.
That's very kind of you. I'm sure that's never happened before, but I appreciate it. So Craig, I'm really happy that you're able to join me today because, this was certainly a very interesting hearing from the standpoint of, I sort of feel like I've said this for every hearing so far. As someone who's followed like the events of January 6th, I'm sure you feel the same way from before January 6th, 2021, and the lead up, and even like the time before the 2020 presidential election when Trump's supporters and administration members and, you know, we're all talking about what they would do in the event that Trump would lose. So nothing really blows my mind, but in terms of like new revelations, like from like, you know, the very like some new thing that we just learned about that I had no idea happened. But to see, there are little things like specifics that Trump did, like trying to grab his presidential car steering wheel. But it is surprising and amazing and revealing to me every time specifics and details come out, which this hearing has, all these hearings have done a lot of. What are your feelings on the hearings in general, I guess?
Well, one thing that I think, just talking about the specific revelations, one of the very interesting things that came up in the hearing today, you were saying that it wasn't that surprising. Lots of people who were sort of Trumpologists knew that he was going to try to hold on to power at any cost. I actually thought that what happened on January 6th was more likely to happen on January 20th. And we found out today in the hearing that originally the pro-Trump rally organizers were planning to have their rally on the Mall later in the month, on the 20th. And Trump was the one who requested moving it up 2 weeks so that it would land on January 6th. And so that his mob wouldn't simply disrupt inauguration, but would actually be there to prevent the certification of the Electoral College. I predicted that all of this was going to happen on the 20th, and then January 6th became the date. And we found out some more details of that in this hearing today. That was a choice that wasn't just beneficial to Trump, but it may have come from the top. That there was actually some coordination to move the date of the rally so that they could besiege the Capitol for this specific purpose.
Right. And there were at today's hearing, there were these text messages that came into light. And again, you know, the fact that there would be Trump confidants and aides or cabinet members or members of the administration who had concerns going into this, not surprising. But still, it's amazing to see some of the names and what they were saying. For example, Katrina Pearson, one of Trump's most loyal on air, she would constantly, I feel like since before Trump won, like in during the campaign era of like 2015 and 2016, where she was constantly on air as like, you know, one of the main people just, you know, placating Trump on air as much as possible. She had texts revealed at the hearing that basically one of them was how she was concerned about the crazies literally talking about Trump supporters. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And she had a text exchange with Trump's former campaign manager, Brad Parscale, who was the campaign manager who was fired late in the 2020 campaign when Trump sort of tried to serious things up and he brought on Bill Stepien and a couple of other seasoned campaign hands, mostly from Chris Christie's political orbit. And there was a text exchange between Brad Parscale and Katrina Pearson where here they are on January 6, 2021, expressing real contrition and shock about what was actually happening, about what the rhetoric and what the lies had driven Trump's supporters to do in their name. And in public, Katrina Pearson, at the same time that the insurrection was happening, Katrina Pearson was on television saying that maybe it was Antifa, maybe it wasn't Trump supporters, we shouldn't jump to conclusions, and also saying that maybe they had legitimate grievances. And meanwhile, Parscale, for his credit, seems like he expressed all this contrition here in this testimony or in the text exchanges that were included as evidence in the hearing. But Brad Parscale is working to reelect Donald Trump right now. He's still part of the Trump gravy train, even though he was fired. I imagine that he is part of that gravy train because he was, I believe, the highest paid campaign manager in history, raking like $800,000 a year, which is 4 to 6 times more than most national campaign managers make. He was absolutely lining his pockets during 2020 through Trump's campaign coffers and political action committees. And, the grift never stops.
Right. And, I'm looking at these text messages in front of me, the Brad Parscale, Katrina Pearson ones, and it's amazing. I mean, this line from Katrina Pearson, I feel like, really sums up in many ways just like the right-wing sort of mantra, I guess, in like everything they do. Like, he texts her January 6th, so that day, a few hours after it seems the rioters have left the Capitol building. This is at 7:14 p.m. A sitting president asking for civil war. This week I feel guilty for helping him win, says Brad Parscale. And Katrina Pearson replies to him, "You did what you felt right at the time, and therefore it was right. No introspection, no learning from their mistakes, just... hey, you were right when you were doing. You felt like it was right when you were doing it. So yeah, you were right. You can't. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's sort of a man. I mean, I guess that's sort of, I guess, how he's looking at things now. I'm right for doing it now because the situation's different. But so I'm right.
It's important to remember that so many of the people who worked to help Trump in 2016 did so because they had sincerely been lied to by mainstream media, by right-wing media. They sincerely believed that Hillary Clinton was like this demonic figure that would destroy America. It's not just that they disagreed with her policies. It's not just that she was going to marginally increase taxes on like General Electric and Jeff Bezos. Lots of people who were steeped in right-wing ideology thought that they were preventing a sort of antichrist-like figure from getting into the White House by defeating Hillary Clinton. And so they felt that they were on a crusade, even if supporting Donald Trump was abominable to them. That's how the so-called moderate Republicans convinced themselves to go onto his side. And Parscale, you know, he's probably one of those people who I imagine he would use incredibly colorful language if he was ever having a conversation about Hillary Clinton to this day. And he thinks that defeating her was probably still worth it, even if it did bring the United States, you know, to the brink of civil war.
Right. And, you know, we didn't have anyone this time around. Like before today, the previous hearing was that amazing, testimony, live testimony, public testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson, who is a former White House aide to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, at the time. And, you know, there were a number of interesting things coming from her, everything from, you know, the steering wheel, Trump reaching over to because he wanted to go to the Capitol building to storm the Capitol with his supporters, apparently. And then, of course, you know, some of the sillier things from before January 6th, where apparently he was so upset with how overturning the election was going for him that, she came into the White House dining room and was told to clean ketchup from dripping off the walls because Trump threw his lunch because he was so upset. Did we ever confirm what that lunch was, by the way? What exactly was he eating, a hamburger?
Maybe it's apocryphal. Maybe I'm making this up, but I thought it was something to do with French fries. But when I was watching, actually, my streaming service froze the moment she said that she saw ketchup dripping, .. And it wasn't, because it happened right at the 2 p.m. hour, the 2 to 2:01 exchange. And so I had to reload it, and it was totally worth the wait, because it's such a dramatic and ridiculous and totally revelatory story about Donald Trump throwing his food against the wall like a child would have a tantrum. In her opening remarks today, Liz Cheney said, President Trump is a 76-year-old man. He's not an impressionable young child. And it is absolutely true. He is an old man. And he's certainly not a child, but he does have a sort of childlike impressionability where he's convinced himself that the fantasies that he was sowing for his supporters to gin up his base, he does seem to have legitimately convinced himself in many ways that a lot of his lies were real, because it just doesn't matter. You know, he's a habitual liar. He's a psychopath. He doesn't care about reality. All that matters is whatever serves himself. The most interesting thing I think about Pat Cipollone's testimony today, he was the sort of one of the stars in non-live testimony, is he would have had plenty of opportunities in mainstream media. The New York Times, for instance, would very happily write a lengthy article if Pat Cipollone wanted to confront or dispute or debunk any of Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony from last month. He chose not to dispute any of her claims from her testimony, either in his own testimony or in public media, in interviews, all of which would have been very readily available to someone like him. But his testimony today also corroborated or didn't debunk specific claims and considerable amounts of her testimony. So her sort of star turn from that sixth hearing really is even on more solid ground after today's seventh hearing. And I guess one other interesting note is that the January 6th committee originally, I think, only scheduled 5 hearings. We're already into 7. There are at least 2 more, though I suspect that there may be as many as a dozen or 15. They seem to have an endless amount of information. And the hearings themselves, frankly, they're going really well as a media product, as an entertainment product, and as a news product. You know, it's a bunch of home runs back to back for the committee. They're really grabbing attention and really, really affecting public opinion about Donald Trump, and really informing the public in a way that someone like me, like kind of a professional cynic, I'm a little surprised about how successful they've been. But it's because they just have rock solid witnesses just every time.
It's amazing how, as it goes on, it seems like more people want to come out and share more. Like, this has been good for them, too, in terms of that. Like, people who weren't going to speak with them prior are now saying, I'm ready to do it. Obviously, some people, like I saw there was a report yesterday that Stephen Bannon said he was ready to do a public testimony. Some people, I'm sure, aren't going to go up there, aren't seeking out to pull a Cassidy Hutchinson.
Yeah.
I don't think Bannon's about to turn on Trump and spill the beans. He's doing it for self-serving reasons, I'm sure. Or, you know, he realizes how well these hearings have been going from a media perspective, like you just said, and wants to try to take advantage. I wasn't planning on getting to this right now, but you brought it up, and it's sort of the perfect segue. You know, it is amazing. I'm a cynic, too, in the sense of I expect, at least for Congress, and as someone who's regularly disappointed by the Democratic Party, as much as I'd like them to not disappoint, they always do. I was also someone who was not expecting much from these hearings. And I'm not one of those people who is like, downplaying January 6th or move on. No, I think, you know, it's important, especially if the purpose is to hold people who were responsible accountable. Like, it actually really upsets me that the only people who've really been held accountable for anything that happened on January 6th are like the low-level pawns who were brainwashed by Trump, like the QAnon believers, the MAGA faithful, like you're just ordinary, everyday Trump voters from like the the guy showing up and sleeping outside all his rallies to like the small business bourgeoisie who were flying in on their private plane to go to January 6th, regardless of where they were on the class spectrum. everyone who sort of had any sort of consequence, like jail time or anything like that, have been sort of like no level in terms of like the planning and preparation for this stuff. Just the people who showed up and broke into the Capitol. And of course, they should face the consequences, but they're not really the ones who, you know, when facing the consequences, a message will be sent. You know, we need, in my opinion, the people who put this together, the major players from the various different groups who worked with Trump to go down in some way, be held responsible, members of Trump's administration, Trump's family, Trump himself. And so, you know, I was sort of like, you know, obviously this isn't going to happen. So these hearings are eh. But like you said, they've been surprisingly good, which makes it funny that Fox News constantly, when they do have to bring it up, their way of downplaying it, and it works perfectly with what you just said about Pat Cipollone, who for people who don't know, he was like a White House counsel, like a lawyer for Trump's White House. When you said like he had plenty, he could have like had the opportunity to speak out on some of Cassidy Hutchinson's claims. He didn't. And Fox News, their thing when they have to talk about this stuff is to say, oh, we didn't hear from the other side. This isn't fair. Where is the two sides to every story? Yeah. Where is the cross-examination? Well, every single one of Trump's side of the story, they don't want to participate in this. They've been asked to. They've been given the opportunity to, and they just refuse to do it.
Yeah, and whenever you hear Fox News complain about the composition of the hearings itself and the committee itself, it's important to remember that Nancy Pelosi set up the current Congress with the potential for a huge own goal. She wanted to create a truly bipartisan 9/11 styled commission with equal apportionment for Republicans and Democrats to do a full scale bipartisan investigation of January 6th. That would have led nowhere. That would have accomplished nothing. And the Republicans, refusing to dignify the merit of an investigation itself, refused to participate. And so now we have a bipartisan panel, but it doesn't have participants from like Kevin McCarthy's wing of the Trumpist Republican Party. And that's allowed them to do really rigorous investigative work that has the full veneer and gloss of bipartisan legitimacy. And they don't have Jim Jordan or Jim Banks on the committee destroying it from within the way that, say, like the bipartisan Benghazi commissions were just a total farce and created into a farce by Republican operatives sitting on those panels. But you talked about how the people so far who have actually been punished for January 6th are so low level. We saw one of them today. Stephen Ayers was one of the two live witnesses today. He testified that this destroyed his family. It strained his marriage. He lost his job. He had to move. He served time in prison for committing a felony, felony trespassing. All you have to do is walk up those steps. I used to live in a part of the city and work in a part of the city where I would intentionally walk across Capitol Hill every day. Do you know how many times I would have loved to walk up those steps and cross the threshold and just take a photo? But that would have been a crime. I would have been at best escorted off the premises and potentially like arrested. And hundreds, thousands of rioters broke into the Capitol. Every single thing they did in there was a felony. And he's had the book thrown at him and it's destroyed his life. But the 147 Republican incumbents, 138 in the House of Representatives and 9 United States senators joined that armed insurrection that day. They joined the insurrection. They voted to overthrow the election results in Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, or at least attempted to. They lodged attempts to decertify those election results. That is an insurrection, and none of them will ever be held accountable. And frankly, the House had an opportunity with a Democratic majority to frankly expel many of those people, and they chose not to. You know, we've seen Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert threatened with like losing their committee assignments. But the people who joined the insurrection should have been expelled from Congress. That's what we did during the Civil War. And it was the right thing to do. And we didn't do it. And so they're still there gumming up the works and just waiting in the wings to take the majority next year, this year, if the midterms go the way that historical precedent might indicate they may.
Right, right. Yeah, that Stephen Ayer's testimony was amazing in terms of, like, I think that's another really important thing. Even if every single one of those, like, you know, Trump pawns were basically used as warm bodies to, you know, hide the real motives or the real plot from, you know, the high level Trump players who were working directly with the White House to figure out how to overturn the election. You know, there's a certain, like, you know, I don't want to say empathy or feel bad for them, because obviously they did what they did and there's consequences. And, you know, when you even listen to that guy, Stephen Ayers, like, he was talking and they asked him if he still thought the election was stolen, and he still kind of
believes it.
He still, yeah, you could hear. But, like, there is a sort of, like, just basic, like, humanity in terms of, like, you can see that that was, like, a guy who was not who he was before he was brainwashed by all this bullshit that he read over the past, like, 5 or 6 years. And, like, it's amazing that, like, that's the guy, and many like him, who paid the price, and still, like we saw with him, are sort of like confused as to where they are, where their thoughts lie here. And you have, you know, the players who put this all together. Not even, honestly, I don't even think the most of them are breaking a sweat. I don't know. Maybe some of them are worried because they're not that important to Trump. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean. The Department of Justice and their sort of apologists and the kind of mainstream media pundits you might see on CNN or MSNBC who are just saying, like, just wait, let the process work. They would say, like, this is how you roll up a mob boss, is you start with the low-level enforcers and the nobodies and the drug mules and the simple people to get to the kingpin. But at the end of the day, Stephen Ayers had his life ruined because he fell for a lie perpetrated by a con man billionaire. Mobster who is completely unaccountable for the crimes and the vast criminal network that operates underneath him, because he operates with just the thinnest veneer of plausible deniability, using the kind of weasel words and an impressionable rhetoric that we heard from Michael Cohen when he gave testimony to the House in 2019. You know, we know how this works. You know, he essentially works like a mafioso in a movie might. And the people who are getting rolled up and hurt, the people who showed up on January 6th to take part, to be the sort of the warm bodies, the mob that acted as cover for the organized violent insurrectionist leaders, you know, the Oath Keepers and the tactical militant groups. Stephen Ayers wasn't one of them. He was just supposed to be in the way, absorbing police attention and distracting from the attempt to go in and decapitate the government. People, they set up a gallows. People went in there with weapons. They were trying to hunt and kill Nancy Pelosi and Mike Pence. And somehow that entire day, only a single bullet was fired, which is the bullet that struck and killed insurrectionist terrorist Ashley Babbitt as she tried to enter the last barricaded chamber of the Congress, and was just 30 or 40 feet from members of Congress who she certainly had intent to harm.
Right. And you know what? Same thing for her too, though, with Stephen Ayers, in terms of, like, again, you know, she did what, I mean, I wish that nobody died that day, obviously, but, you know, she did what she did. There were consequences. I wish those weren't the consequences, but, she's another example of just, like, a nobody who was used as a warm body, and she lost her life. Like, she didn't have to die for this.
And
like, they used
Ashley Babbitt took an oath to her country. She was an Air Force veteran. Yeah. You know, like, she joined the United States military and signed on a dotted line saying that she would die for her country. And instead, she died for this lie from this con man who refused to just accept that he had lost Georgia and Arizona and Pennsylvania fair and square.
Right, right. And, you know, another really interesting testimony from today, the only other live testimony, if I remember correctly. Sometimes these hearings just they all just meld together. Before I forget, the other big Cassidy Hutchinson reveal, in fact, probably the most important, I forgot to mention, from last week's or the last hearing, was how Trump specifically asked Secret Service to remove the metal detectors, because he wanted weapons there. He didn't say those words specifically, but he knew that whoever was armed, he did say this, weren't there for him, to hurt him. I mean, it's a not so subtle way for him to actually just say, I know there are weapons here and I want them to be here because they're not going to be pointed at me. I mean.
And from a legal framework, that actually, that admission, if it were, if that were admissible in court, which Cassie Hutchinson's testimony is probably not, but if it's true that you could prove that Donald Trump says that, that is, that's demonstrable proof that he knew, that the insurrectionists were there on his behalf, and that he was actually taking part in a violent insurrection to overthrow the government. It shows his state of mind and his culpability of guilt for his participation and leadership of the insurrection.
Right. Now, let's get to this the only other live testimony from the July 12th, January 6th hearing. The former Oath Keeper spokesperson, Jason Van Tadenhove.
Yeah.
This was interesting to me because this was a case of a guy who worked directly with the Oath Keepers. Like, it was his job. Like, he got paid. And, like, they hired him for this. And he left. And the interesting thing is he didn't leave, like, after the fallout of all this. He didn't leave... at the height of Oath Keepers working with Trump, so you could question if they're self-serving motives. Well, obviously, in a way, it is self-serving. But this isn't a guy who just recently came to light and said, oh, I'm out of here because of the consequences I'll receive. This is a guy who left years ago. Like, what was it, 2016, I believe, he left the Oath Keepers? So to me, like, this isn't like the word of somebody who's just doing what he can to cut a deal. This is a guy who... was not involved in any of this, but knew the inner machinations of this group and how they worked.
And fascinatingly, he testified that he first became exposed to the Oath Keepers during the Bundy Ranch standoff with the Bureau of Land Management back in 2014. And so the sort of quick refresher here for people who don't remember or have total recall of 7 years ago was a right-wing rancher was stealing essentially federal land. He was illegally grazing his cattle on federal land, which essentially he was stealing from the taxpayers by doing that. And the Oath Keepers showed up when the Bureau of Land Management threatened to seize his cattle. They showed up with long guns and they staked out the premise and they held the Bureau of Land Management, federal law enforcement officers, at gunpoint until the law enforcement officers relented and gave this this individual, Cliven Bundy, they relinquished and let him have his cattle back and let him continue illegally grazing on federal land, destroying a natural habitat and stealing from the taxpayers. Just imagine a scenario where armed insurrectionists, and this was an insurrection, very much, armed insurrectionists show up and point guns at federal law enforcement officers and win without a fight. That's what happened, and that's what the Oath Keepers are. You know, they were founded in 2009. I believe it was in March 2009. It's not an accident. This was like the sixth week of Barack Obama's presidency. And the oath that they're supposed to be keeping is the same oath that Ashley Babbitt took, right? It's the oath to defend this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they believe that they still owe that oath to their country even after they leave leave uniform. And what the witness testified to was that this wasn't just a veterans organization. It wasn't a hunting group. It wasn't a social club. This was a violent militia organization that was intent on overthrowing the government. And he knew because he joined that organization. He was pulled into it by their rhetoric and the extremism. I think he actually said that experiencing Holocaust denial from some of the Oath Keeper leadership is what drove him out of the movement when he realized they were just totally off the deep end. But he's someone who knows how this extremist movement works because he was radicalized by it and he joined it willingly and was a spokesperson for the organization for several years, though not, you know, he didn't describe himself as a member himself. But the Oath Keepers are this violent militia group, and really calling them a militia is somewhat too much veneer. Militias are illegal in the United States. The only militia in the United States is the National Guard. That's the well-regulated militia mentioned in the Second Amendment. Every other militia is a criminal organization. And so the Oath Keepers aren't a militia. They're a domestic terrorist group. At best, they're a criminal gang, but it's certainly organized crime of some sort. And they have violent underpinnings and have always sought to undermine and potentially overthrow the United States government. They started doing it by pointing their guns at immigrants and border agents in the southern border zone in 2009, 2010. Members of the Oath Keepers refused to take lawful orders from President Obama when they were still members of the military. And they continue with their extremism all the way up to the point where several of them organized tactical military operations to go into the Capitol on January 6, 2021 and actually capture members of the government. We see that on video. There's plenty of publicly available evidence of this, and the January 6th committee has increasing testimony to this effect about the role that the Oath Keepers played in organizing, casing, and spearheading the mob and using the mob as cover for their own movement toward decapitating the government.
Right. You know, that's they're the perfect the perfect example of how whenever anyone just says, oh, January 6th was just like a protest that went off the deep end, and there was maybe they'll even go so far to call it a riot. I mean, you just have to look at those videos. Like, yeah, if it was just the Stephen Ayers and Ashley Babbitts, climbing the building outside, maybe you can like get away with arguing that it was just a spontaneous event. Still, Trump got them all there and riled them up, but spontaneous event where people went wild. But there's video proof of the Oath Keepers in the audience, very clearly, like, with a plan of action that they had, like, scouted out ways to go up steps, and you could see them together, not just, like, one guy in military gear who showed up by himself, like, large groups in certain areas ready to go. I mean, some of them even had, like, what are those, like, oh, I'm having a mental block, those, like, plastic handcuffs, those...
Zip ties,
thank you, yes. I mean, this was very clearly an orchestrated event. If you just look at them, like, you don't have to look at the other many groups and the fact that Trump brought all those even low level people there specifically to do that. Even if you want to look past all that, the Oath Keepers are right there pretty much in uniform to show you how established they are as a unit. I mean,
it's the most fascinating thing about this is I don't want to go too much into old history, but the Oath Keepers, essentially the Capitol riot, right, the insurrection, was the Arab world up in protest about that video in 2012 that was the launching point for the Benghazi attack, right? There were these protests all over the Arab world about a supposed video that misinformation had said was funded by the United States government that was deeply derogatory toward Islam. And in the city of Benghazi, hundreds of people were protesting in the street. And inside of that protest, Al-Qaeda terrorist elements inserted themselves to use the protest as cover, to use the mob as an opportunity to get closer to American assets. And they used that mob to lay siege to the American consulate in Benghazi. And that is exactly what happened to the Capitol on January 6, 2021. But the terrorists inserting themselves into that mob weren't Al-Qaeda. It was the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys.
Did you just brought that? I'm having like vague memories of that now, and it's all coming together. Was the actual video that you're talking about that set off what happened in Benghazi, was it that video by that guy down in like Florida who burned the Quran publicly?
The guy who burned Quran, yeah.
And then he showed up at the Ground Zero Mosque, and there was a whole bit. The Ground Zero Mosque, unbelievable! Oh my God, this is going back now.
Yep.
I even remember when you were talking about the Bundy thing. I was even like, oh, I remember that like it was yesterday. this is my life is the timeline of my life could be laid out by following right wing extremism. That's unfortunate for me.
It's been a pretty horrifying 15 years if your sort of maturation in American politics began with the Great Recession, and it's really just been one kick in the knees after another.
Right. I mean, my radicalization, my getting into like leftist politics and, you know, was the fallout of 9/11. So it really has been even beyond it for me in terms of like, you know, the George Bush years. Oh my God. But we're getting, I don't want to go too far off. Let's stick to, because there's a lot more here to talk about. And I want to definitely hit, did we cover everything with the Oath Keepers? Because I don't want to look over anything on that. Was there any other revelation but the testimony of some background? I don't want to look over any Oath Keepers stuff. Did we hear anything about the Oath Keepers leader? What's his name again? Stuart Rhodes, right?
Stuart Rhodes.
Was there any
there was a bit of conversation about him, but the primary focus wasn't so much, you know, he didn't provide the the core of the testimony. And so the primary focus was about the Oath Keepers as they organize and operate as a whole. And the most interesting thing there was just that this individual was turned off by the Oath Keepers because of their other abhorrent beliefs, but not the violence and the white nationalism. It was all the other abhorrent and conspiratorial things that came to a head with you know, this anti-Semitic conspiracy.
Right. Well, maybe, you know, it'd be nice if they eventually come to, you know, come to have a come to Jesus moment and realize that, oh, wow, all these things are always linked. They're always linked. But who knows? So let's now talk about this. Let me set up, because there's a video clip I want to play. I'm very excited to play this clip because I was watching the hearing. And they do this whole lead up into the various different, like, right-wing online figures who basically were talking about January 6th in detail publicly on their platforms, basically espousing exactly what was going to go down January 6th weeks before. Now, you know, an interesting thing, I don't know, I don't think we actually really know this yet. Do we have any idea, because we don't have the direct link yet between like Trump and any of these figures, like, for example, an Alex Jones. We know that Trump has been on Alex Jones' show. We know, you know, Roger Stone is a good friend of both Trump and Alex Jones. Do we have any inclination yet in terms of proof or anything that's been shown that how did so many of these right-wing internet figures and personalities, how did they know about January 6th scheduled events before it was even like it even went through the grapevine from, like, you know, Trump even saying go down here on January 6th?
Yeah. So there actually is video. I think it was from about a year and a half ago where Alex Jones claims that he was asked by Donald Trump to lead the march from the rally to the Capitol. He said, I believe he said that the conversation between him and Trump happened on January 4th of 2021, and that he was specifically asked to lead the march on the Capitol. That hasn't been corroborated, and the source is Alex Jones. I guess you can always trust a dishonest man to be dishonest, right? And so he is a professional liar. We don't really have corroboration of that from another source. But we certainly do have some circumstantial evidence now presented by the January 6th committee that this constellation of right-wing figures, including Alex Jones, seem to have been in conversation with one another ahead of January 6th, and they knew that Trump was planning to spontaneously lead a march down to the Capitol building. That doesn't prove that Alex Jones wasn't lying. He might have just opportunistically joined in the fray. But it does prove that there was some coordination by some people who at least had an indication of Trump's thinking if they weren't actually engaged in the sort of strategic conversations with Trump himself.
All right. So let's play this clip. I know that a number of people in this clip are probably not happy that they're in this clip. I know one very specifically is very unhappy that he's in this clip. I'm sure he'll be talking about it tonight on his show. I don't want to give it away for people who don't know what I'm talking about. You'll be surprised to see. Let's play this clip right now.
It's Saturday, December 19th. The year is 2020. And one of the most historic events in American history has just taken place. President Trump, in the early morning hours today, tweeted that he wants the American people to march on Washington, D.C., on January 6, 2021.
And now Donald Trump is calling on his supporters to descend on Washington, D.C., January 6th.
He is now calling on we the people.
I just got to pause it for a second and just rewind for people watching on the video and to let people who are listening to the podcast version of the show know that, yes, you were hearing Tim Pool, December 19th, 2020, in a YouTube video that was submitted in this compilation from the January 6th committee about right-wing media personalities who were talking about this event before it happened. And in the little chyron they put for him, they put Tim Pool, pro-Trump YouTuber. Oh, boy, yes. Continue. Let's continue.
January 6th.
He is now calling on we the people to take action and to show our numbers.
We're going to only be saved by millions of Americans moving to Washington.
This is a right-wing commentator, Matt Bracken, for people listening to the podcast.
Occupying the entire area, if necessary, storming right into the Capitol. You know, there we know the rules of engagement. If you have enough people, you can push down any kind of a fence or a wall.
This could be Trump's last stand. And it's a time when he has specifically called on his supporters to arrive in D.C. That's something that may actually be the big push Trump supporters need to say. This is it. It's now or never.
You better understand something, son. You better understand something. Red wave, bitch. Red wave.
Now, this is a guy, a pro-Trump YouTuber named Salty Cracker, also goes by MAGAFET. And I got to say, out of all the people they showed, this one even threw me for a loop. And I'm pretty sure I thought I followed all these guys. Were you familiar with Salty Cracker?
No, a lot of us were laughing about this. Our most QAnon embedded researchers are familiar with him. But most of us just had a good laugh along with the rest of the audience. He's quite obscure, though very influential. You can build enormous followings on YouTube, where you can essentially just radicalize teenagers, and that's his whole business model.
Right. I mean, you can see with the MAGAFET branding there. But good to know that January 6th committee really dug deep and pulled this guy out.
There's going to be a red wedding going down January 6th.
On that day, Trump says, show up for a protest, it's gonna be wild. And based on what we've already seen from the previous events, I think Trump is absolutely correct.
Motherfucker, you better look outside. You better look out. January 6th, kick that fucking door open, look down the street. There's gonna be a million plus geeked up armed Americans.
The time for games is over. The time for action is now. Where were you when history called? Where were you when you and your children's destiny and future was on the line?
I mean, it's an amazing compilation, and it really drives home the point that they wanted to make. But also, I need to say, again, I really need to drive myself. I need to drive home as someone who specifically went on Tim Pool's show just 2 months ago to drive home that point of the self-proclaimed disaffected liberal is not that self-proclaimed disaffected liberal. I was a great joy. I know exactly what he was going to say, that him being labeled a pro-Trump YouTuber just shows how little the January 6th committee has done research-wise, and it shows that you can't trust anything they say because they got that wrong. You know, the guy who claimed that Trump would win a 49-state landslide in 2020. Over and over and over again, and even at times said maybe even a 50-state landslide. I guess that's someone who's not a big Trump fan, according to
Tim Pool claiming that he's not sort of a Trumpist is somewhat like it's almost as silly as Sean Hannity often says, like, I'm not a registered Republican, I'm a registered conservative. And it's like, Sean Hannity is a professional Republican operative. Like, he's a political operative who helped run Trump's administration from his chair at Fox News. The idea that he's not a Republican is a sham. And Tim Pool, he's very, very proud that he like used to work at Vice. And so he pretends to be a Brooklyn hipster liberal. He's just one of the sort of regular libertarian crypto fascist adjacent people that, you know, that you might have met in college and decided that you didn't want to talk to them anymore at the parties.
Right. Or in my case, you might have met that person right there in the Tim Pool compound. So let's talk about do you think the next hearing is going to be? Do you have any idea? I mean, I know they sort of drop this stuff pretty pretty late. It's a little bit. That's my one complaint about the media the media planning around this. That they sort of just randomly, and I get in the case of Cassidy Hutchinson, where she basically came out and said, I'll do this, and they quickly put it together. But like the one today was planned for a little while, and I feel like people didn't know exactly what it was going to be about. I mean, Media Matters reached out to me with some ideas of what it would be about, and I actually had to like wait to watch it myself to make sure that like that's what it was going to be about, so I knew what we would talk about.
Yeah, the thing is that they keep breaking they keep breaking news in each hearing, and the hearing, each hearing is affecting the witness behavior into the next one. Liz Cheney talked about this in her opening statement. Cassidy Hutchinson originally was stonewalling the committee, and after watching the first three hearings, she came forward and offered new testimony. Maybe it was even the first five hearings. And then she offered to change her testimony or enter new testimony, more explanatory testimony in the sixth hearing. Because of the fact that things change sort of live, it's difficult to get a hold on what the content is going to be ahead of time. But that probably actually prevents them from getting sort of trapped in a news cycle that's trying to debunk the hearings before they happen. Cassidy Hutchinson's claim that Donald Trump lunged for a Secret Service agent, for instance, became a day-long news story where even serious journalists like Jim Sciutto and others from CNN were relaying what is probably misinformation from pro-Trump Secret Service sources, claiming that didn't happen. But she said it under oath, on the record, under threat of perjury, and they're talking on background to a journalist. I think that the next one is going to be mostly focused on the documentarian Alex Holder and his work on the Trump family in the lead up to January 6th. He has thousands of hours of archival footage and video from interviews with the Trump, testimonial interviews with the Trump individual family members from September through January, September 2020 through January 2021. I believe that is going to be the focus of the next hearing, but they could change that. That was supposed to be, that was what we thought the hearing was going to be about on Thursday, and they decided not to hold a hearing this upcoming Thursday. They're going to do it next week. So they may change the content of that in the lead up based on new witness behavior. It's totally possible that this hearing, which I think was a bombshell and great TV, is going to affect people's behavior and have them reach out to the committee again and try to add more details to the story. This is certainly not, we're not near the end of this committee hearing structure. I think that is a safe assumption.
Right, right. What are your feelings about Liz Cheney? You know, I have to ask because, you know, I watch and I get why it's important to have a Republican there. And at the same time, though, I feel like, unfortunately, the way, you know, at times politics becomes a sort of how do I put this? You know, like a team sport where people like act like it really is entertainment. Like there's nothing real on the line. They hear Liz Cheney saying stuff they like, and all of a sudden, Liz Cheney good, which shouldn't be the takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that Liz Cheney and I disagree on literally every policy imaginable, except she and I both are opposed to fascism, at least Trump's fascism, whether or not she would have opposed her own father or the Bush administration's like more despotic and authoritarian impulses remains to be seen. You know, this is a woman who supports torture, who played footsie with every Republican conspiracy about Obama and Clinton, and who sought and received Trump's endorsement in her previous election cycles. It was literally just that she didn't want to overthrow the government on his behalf. And in this case, that's enough because, you know, you're kind of going to war with the army you've got. And, you know, Adam Kinzinger, he was never like a technical Benghazi truther, but he certainly like let himself be adjacent to the Benghazi truth movement. And he would say things like, well, why did we have a stand down order, which didn't happen? And why didn't we buzz the embassy? He's a combat fighter pilot. He knew that wasn't possible. And he would still say stuff like that. You know, just because they didn't want to take part in Donald Trump's fascist coup doesn't mean that they are that they're suddenly absolved of all of their other horrifying draconian right-wing policy positions. But it is heartening to know that like these people on that committee, they wouldn't vote on anything together, but they're there on this. And I think that's kind of what makes it work. I know anecdotally speaking with my own family and friends, that's what works for the people who aren't as politically attached. You know, my mom is no fan of Liz Cheney, but she's listening, and it's working.
Right. Yeah, I feel like strategically, obviously, it's good to have her presence there. I just know how, you know, the way it works with the Democratic Party, I could picture Nancy Pelosi shooting out a fundraising email saying, let's thank Liz Cheney for her work on the January 6th committee.
I mean, just you don't have to imagine too much. Wasn't there already a New York Times op-ed saying that Liz Cheney should replace Vice President Kamala Harris on the ticket in 2024?
You don't
have to imagine it. The Twitter account Doug J. Balloon, who does fake New York Times pitches, pitched Biden Cheney 2024, and then like the next morning, that was an actual op-ed in that newspaper. You know, the predictable sort of rush to beatification, like to lionize a Republican who is a Trump apostate, is very predictable. But in this case, it's the least harmful part of what we're seeing from the Republican Party.
Right. Craig Harrington, Research Director at Media Matters for America, thank you so much for joining me. This was absolutely great. You had mentioned before the show that you were worried because there was a storm where you are and, yeah, you know, your dog and everything. I was just worried about, losing the internet connection, but everything worked out.
Yeah. Fortunately, I live in Washington, D.C., not like Austin, Texas, where we don't have to live in fear of our electricity or internet cutting out randomly in the middle of the day. We live in one of those liberal hellholes where we're like have good governance.
Right, right. And before we go, let people know where they can find you online. Feel free to drop any links, social media handles. The floor is yours.
Yeah. So most importantly, please check us out at MediaMatters.org. You can find research from myself and the whole team at Media Matters for America, which is updated virtually 24/7, correcting misinformation, conservative misinformation, when it pops up in right-wing and mainstream outlets alike. You can follow most of our researchers and staff on Twitter as well. And if you'd like to follow me for what's mostly politics and National Basketball Association free agency updates, I'm at Craigopedia.
Well, that's the most important combination of things. Not for me, though, as someone who does not watch the sport, but people will appreciate it, I'm sure.
Thank you
so much, Craig. This was fantastic. Have a great night. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Bloop, bloop. That's not all for you and me. We will now be going to the second half of the show where I will be opening up the phone lines and you, that's right, you, dear listener, can call in and discuss, well, quite frankly, discuss anything you'd like. What would you like to call in and talk about? What did I do with, there it is. I could not find, no, that's not what I need. I need to switch the camera. Where did that go? Oh, there it is. This hidden window. Here it is. All right. So before we go to the second half of the show where you can call in and we'll talk. Oh, and you could leave a super chat. YouTube.com/Matt Binder. Drop a super chat. I will read all the super chats in the second half of the show. If you're watching on YouTube, of course, you can do that. If you're watching on Twitch, twitch.tv/Matt Binder. You can subscribe with on Twitch as well. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can connect your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch Prime account. And every single month, Amazon gives you a free Twitch Prime subscription. Basically free money for you to give to your favorite Twitch creator. I'm telling you this because I hope you give it to me. But if you don't, just make sure you use it. Give it to some Twitch creator that you really enjoy. Because otherwise, you're just letting Amazon keep the extra money. And to show you how much I care about you, it is Prime Day. July 12th and July 13th. I'm not telling you to spend money with Amazon. If you want to, that's up to you. But I'm not telling you to do that. Why I am bringing it up is because if you are a Amazon Prime subscriber who's going to connect your Twitch Prime account, this is also something you could do during those 2 days that I don't know if you know about. Amazon's giving away like 30 video games for free. And they're not too shabby either. What were the games? 1 second, I'll pull it up for you guys. Because I know if you're watching me on Twitch, you're a gamer probably, right? Or maybe you're not, but I don't know. 30 free games for Prime members on Twitch. for these next 2 days. You just got to like log in and claim them. Star Wars Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, Star Wars Republic Commando, Metal Slug 2, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Samurai Showdown. I guess some of these are like indie games that I'd not heard of. But you should check them all out. They're free. Fatal Fury. I know that one. Cool. I gotta download these. So when you connect your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account and you give me your free monthly Twitch Prime subscription, be sure to also download those games for free. And you gotta manually resubscribe every month, by the way. It's not an automatic, because they don't want to make it easy for you to use the freebie. Every month you have to manually resubscribe to the Twitch channel you want to subscribe to, or use your subscription on a new Twitch channel. And also, perhaps the most important way you could support this show, if you can, patreon.com/MattBinder. I am so grateful to the people who subscribed over the past week, because I made a call letting people know that, you know, last week was the beginning of the month, and every month we lose some Patreon subscribers, because cards get declined, cards expire, people have to cancel because hard times, lose their job, or, you know, times are tough. Totally get it. This request is only for people who have, a disposable income and want to use it to support the show, or quite frankly, everything I do, because it's not just for this show, it's for Scam Economy and anything else I put out. We are at a new high of 356 patrons. I would really like to, the ultimate goal for the near long term is 1,000 patrons. And we're about what? 35% of the way there, which is not too shabby. But the short term goal is 500 patrons. That's my number for being able to bring someone on board to help get me more content, to help me create more content and put more content out there. So if you could help me get to those 500 patrons, that's only about, 144 more. That would be awesome. And I really do think having that person on board to help would really kickstart, really help move things along quicker too. So patreon.com/MattBinder to support this show if you can. And these are the fine folks who subscribed over the past week. Nick, Michael C, Joseph M, Numbskull, Robert P, Dustin B, David B, Aaron K, Benjamin L, Junta/Cult, Brian M, Bradley M, Rostko K, and Family L. Thank you so much for your support, for helping keeping this show going, helping keeping Scam Economy going, and both shows growing too. And I would like to do more stuff as well. More YouTube content, more straight up call-in live streams, eventually bonus patron-only live streams I'd like to do. I'd also very much like to relaunch the newsletter I was running, do more long form. When I mean long form, I mean 15, 20 minute YouTube videos that like investigate something, like the Jimmy Dore Boogaloo Boy video I did last year. Literally, the Patreon subscribers will help me do all that. So thank you all so much. And, we got a Twitch hype train going right now. What? Twitch.tv/MattBinder. All right, let me thank the people who just subscribed to Twitch as well. Princess Monocle, resubscribed with Prime, subscriber for 2 months. Sigma Mayo, subscribed with Prime. DCastle79. Teacher Lauren, resubscribed with Prime, subscriber for 2 months. Speculum Fight, resubscribed with Prime, subscriber for 6 months. Nohima Star, subscribe with Prime. After 1111, subscribe with Prime. Dom Rutt, subscribe with Prime. Artistic Simplicity, gifted a 1 month subscription. Delusium, resubscribe with Prime, 5 month subscription. Namdaynet, resubscribed for 1 month at, 2 month subscriber, I should say. Muda Supreme gave a gift community sub. Ritzky Biz with the resubscription with Prime, 4 months in a row. Tabby Cat gave out 5 community gift subs. Zachamania resubscribed with Prime. 5 month subscriber there. These are all people who subscribed on Twitch over the past week. Most of these are from today, though. Lauren, or like literally during the stream. Lore Gonomy, subscribe with Prime. Grishimer, subscribe with Prime. Thank you so much. Just now. A Social Communist gifted a 1 month subscription. Thank you so much. Really appreciate all the support, and you got me to the next level hype train over on Twitch. All right. Doomedcast.com for the podcast version of the show. All the links are there. If you can, it's been a little bit since like a month since anyone, but still, usually I get like one written review a month usually. It's been a month since anyone left a review on the Doomed Apple Podcast page. We're only like 20 reviews away from 400 reviews. If you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, just go to Apple Podcasts, type in Doomed with Matt Binder, and leave a review, star review, written review. Also, do the same on Spotify if you can. Go to Spotify, type in Doomed with Matt Binder, and just leave a star review if you can. It's a big help to get more people, to get this show in front of more people. Do the same with Scam Economy if you've already done that for Doomed, and vice versa. Scameconomy.com for all the links for Scam Economy. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder. And if you're not sticking around in the live stream or are a Patreon subscriber, if you're just listening to the freebie podcast, this is where I say goodbye to you. Everyone else, stick around. I will be doing calls, reading YouTube super chats, taking your comments, questions, and more. For everyone else, I will see you. Just give me a minute to, refill my soda and everything. For everyone else, I will see you next time on Doomed.